I want to get in our interview this week with Erica Cram. I got a chance to sit down with her a couple of weeks back, and we talked a lot about Netflix and how they managed to get into the world of audio description. Very exciting stuff. And I'm really glad that she was able to join us here on the show in RNIB's 150th year, which is something we also touch on. Erica, great to have you here on the show.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
How did you end up working at Netflix?
Yeah, so I went to school in San Diego for film and television production. I always thought I would end up on set, but it turns out those are long hours, long days. So I got a job. My first job in Los Angeles was at a post-production sound facility in Culver City. And there I managed projects from start to finish, audio restoration, mixing, etc. And I was there for about 4.5 years when I got a phone call from Netflix to come over. And that was in early 2015. And I could not pass up that opportunity. So I joined the team over at Netflix. What at the time it was called Content Operations. And I've been here for 3.5 years since.
I think for the people who are in the UK, there's maybe less of an understanding as to Netflix's background itself, because it wasn't always about streaming, was it? It was like, what would you say, DVD rental? That was its kind of background, wasn't it?
Right. So Netflix started as a DVD by rental company many years ago. And I think it was always the aim to move into streaming, but they started with DVDs. And so by mail, you could pay a monthly subscription fee. And you can get one or two discs at a time. You used your online queue to choose the movies you wanted, and they'd ship to your door, and then you'd send them back and vice versa. And around 2007 is when they started streaming. And so you had this combination of discs, and you can log on to the website and stream movies. But at the time, most people didn't quite have the internet to do streaming. It was all new. So a lot has happened between 2007 and now.
That's quite incredible, isn't it? I mean, we're talking 11 years ago. And, you know, it doesn't seem that long a time yet.
Yeah.
As you say, so much has happened. The internet's improved so much, and it's allowed companies not like Netflix to actually do what they do, which is fantastic. I guess my question, though, is one aspect of Netflix for blind and partially sighted people has been the growth and the accelerated growth in the amount of audio described content that has appeared in a very short space of time, another major change in a very short space of time. How did that happen? How did Netflix end up doing that? And what kind of kicked it off for the company?
Yeah, so it's an interesting story. So back in 2013, before I was at Netflix, we launched our first Netflix original series, which was House of Cards. And so that shifted a lot of attention and spotlight to Netflix as a new platform and a new place to get original content. And it was towards the end of 2013, early 2014, when we started to hear from the visually impaired and blind community about audio description and that it was something that they wanted and something that they would use. And so in early 2013, the internal discussion started. As you know, it doesn't happen overnight. They spent the next several months working on the technical requirements to support the audio description asset on the Netflix platform. And what's interesting about Netflix is it's not just for one television set. We've got multiple devices. And we also had to spend some time gathering best practices for audio description. So all of 2014 was spent getting prepared for the audio description to be available on our service, as well as putting together a Netflix style guide, etc. And so in the spring of 2015, we launched Daredevil. And unfortunately, it was a miss that we launched it without audio description. After having spent all this time preparing and getting ready for audio description, it was just a miss by a few weeks. But we launched Daredevil without audio description, and as you know, it's the main character is a blind superhero. So within a few weeks of Daredevil launching, we made additional audio description available for other titles that had been in the works for a few months as we were preparing for this launch of AD. And so probably like around April or May, of 2015, we launched Daredevil, and then a few of our other originals with audio descriptions, so Orange is the New Black, House of Cards, etc. And then by summer of 2015, we were up to about 100 shows, and then kind of out the gate from there, we made a commitment to create audio description for all of our Netflix originals. And so, as most people know, we've gone pretty wild with our amount of content, with the amount of content that we have. Since then, it's been something that we've been doing. And then on the licensed side, we've worked with our studio partners and made it a contractual obligation to provide audio description to Netflix if it's available and they have access to the files. So for some of our licensed shows from the networks, so BBC, NBC, ABC, they provide audio description to us if they broadcast with AD.
So that might go some way to answer my next question to you, which is a question a lot of people in the blind and partially sighted community have. And that is, why are some programs that actually have been audio described before for television, say, and even for movies as well, why are they not available with audio description on Netflix?
Well, that's a good question, and probably one of our biggest challenges. I don't begin to understand all the intricacies of licensing content. That's not my forte. But what I do know is that when a show is broadcast, say, in the UK, and then it comes over here to the US, sometimes it passes hands from the broadcast network to a new licensee and vice versa. We've got shows here in the US and maybe in Italy or France or Spain passes hands to sub-licensees. And so I think our challenge is that the sub-licensees that we get content from don't always know that the audio description exists from the original broadcaster, nor do they have access or rights to those files. So I think that is where we run into our biggest obstacle. It's finding where the audio description is, how we can get to it, and making sure that we have the rights to do so.
Now, looking away from the present for a second, and it sounds like you do this anyway a lot, looking at the future, what do you think the TV experience will be like in 150 years for people with sight loss? And I know that's a big question to ask, but
That's a huge question.
And it's an almost impossible question, I guess. But, yes. But I just wonder from your vantage point, you're clearly thinking ahead, you know, maybe not 150 years, but, you know, certainly in the near future. What do you think about the way that you're creating television and film these days?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in the near future, so the next few decades or so, synthesized voice technology is going to be so incredible. I've already seen the beginning of it. We've done a couple experiments with synthesized audio description. And while it's good, I think it's just the beginning, and I'm really excited to see what it can do. So I think in the next few years to decades, we'll definitely get much further along. However, it's so hard to imagine what storytelling will look like 150 years from now. I imagine stories will be told through many layers of immersion beyond sound and vision. I mean, if you look how far we've advanced in the last 150 years, and you think about what technology has enabled us to do, I can't even begin to fathom the possibilities for the future. But I think it's going to be good.
I also just want to ask you about the relationship that Netflix has with RNIB. Of course, RNIB is celebrating its 150th anniversary this year. It is a big year for the charity. And one of its goals, I guess, has always been to work with as many people as possible to make life better for blind people, wherever they are. How important has it been to get feedback, which has been, I know, one of the key relationship parts that you've had with RNIB, getting feedback from people like me who are visually impaired and just want to stamp about, you know, here's what's good, here's what's bad, here's whatever, that feedback. How important is that?
That's a great question. It's so important to us that there's an open dialogue. And I think It's great to hear the good things. It's so nice and heartwarming to hear the positive stories about how audio description has helped those who use it. But Netflix has a very strong culture of feedback in itself. So internally, it's always a checks and balances, and we're always very open and giving with constructive feedback. And I don't think it differs for our external partners. So when people take the time to let us know what's not working or what we can do better, we really do listen. I love hearing the feedback on either side, but it helps us understand what we're doing right and what we're not doing right and what we can work on. So very open to it. And I'm so happy that we do have a relationship with the RNIB, and I hope it continues.
Can I pick up on something you said earlier about Netflix and the style guide? Because I am a user of audio description on Netflix, and one thing I have noticed is that the standard, in my view, and it is my view, the standard of audio description in Netflix seems a lot higher than that of other companies. And I'm talking about companies and certainly broadcasters in the UK. What is it about that style guide that's got it so right? And maybe you could maybe tell us, if possible, how you come to get that right.
Yeah, so the style guide has been around for a few years. Like I said, in 2014, before we ever launched audio description, a lot of time and effort was put into curating what the style guide and requirements were. And it's open to the public, so anyone can take a look at those standards. It's not lengthy, but I think where the real assurance comes in is the quality checks that we do and the standards that we hold our partners to. So those that are creating audio description for us, we have a very high bar when it comes to the quality. And I think the same can be said for our video assets and our time text assets as well. So audio description was no exception. We have no problem pushing back if it's not to what we expect in our standard. And I think that that is something that's that applies to Netflix across the board. But I know at the beginning, the style guide was created through research and speaking to people who use it and people who create it and working with vendors that have done this for decades. So a lot of thought went into it. So we have a really great foundation to work from. I also think that a lot of it comes from the quality check once it comes to Netflix and making sure that it meets the needs. Obviously, when we work with our licensed partners, it was created for broadcast, so we don't always have as much flexibility. But we do everything that we can to make sure that the expectation on your end is met and exceeded. And if we're not doing that, we want to hear about it. So we take it very seriously, and I think that that's where it shows in the work that we do.
One of the criticisms I hear most about Netflix and audio description is that in the audio description category, of which you go into find all the programs with audio description, is that they're essentially all lumped together. And some people have suggested that wouldn't it be good if, you know, you don't want to see the kids' programs because you're a huge sci-fi fan, or, you know, you can you get the genre option in there. Is that something that Netflix could do?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I know that on our website, if you go into the audio description section, you can search by a few parameters, which includes genre, the release year, suggestions for you, which will be curated based on your watch history, and then A to Z, to find things in alphabetical order. But I do know that that only applies to the website. So that leaves out the TV experience and the mobile experience. So I definitely think there is room for improvement there, that we could apply the same treatment over to our other devices as well. So definitely some feedback that I'd like to take to our engineering team internally to see if that we can apply that across the board.
Erica, thank you so much for being here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So there you go. That was our interview with Erica Cram from Netflix. Do you know, one thing that stood out there, and we didn't get a chance to get into much more detail with Erica on, was the subject of this synthesized audio description. I'm really intrigued by this, Sean.
I am. I'm in two minds because it does sound like it would be easier, make audio descriptive tracks easier to produce, cheaper to produce. But does it lose the emotion? But then again, should audio descriptive tracks have any emotion in them anyway? Mm. It brings up some interesting questions.
Same argument Talking Books has had for years.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I mean, I think it maybe should have a bit of emotion in it. But at the same time, you know, when I think about the audio description tracks, like if I watch Stranger Things or House of Cards, they don't tend to have any emotion that I can think of. So I don't know if it loses it, but I am intrigued by it. So there are two current series that are on Netflix right now you can actually go and listen to. And I maybe shouldn't say this because you should maybe find it for yourself. But I'm quite intrigued to see what people think of this. There's two series. One is called Fastest Car and the other is called A Shot in the Dark. Fastest Car's all about driving, obviously, and the Shot in the Dark is all about reporters that go out at night to get stories. That series does appeal to me. One is male, one is female, and these are synthesized audio recordings. I'll be very interested to hear your thoughts on that, and I'm sure Netflix would as well.